So first of all, thank you very much for the invitation to give this talk and to spend this few days here. Nice weather, though I have to also apologize because I got like a little cold. So yeah, I want to talk about this work we did together with Gia Valli, Gregory Gavadadze, and Rakib Rahman, who is a student at NYU, where we discussed the gravitational effects of domain walls in theories of gravity modified at large distances. So one reason to discuss this is that, well, in the DGP model, in the Valli Gavadadze Parrate model, which is one of these kind of theories, the solutions for gravitating domain walls can be found exactly, both on the brain and in the bulk. And in such theories where nonlinearities are very important, they play a crucial role, it's very useful to have exact solutions in order to get useful information. So the main results that we get are these two, essentially. So on one hand, generally the solutions display this screening of the domain wall tension in this case, and by screening I mean that once you put a source in this theories of IR modified gravity, the theory responds in such a way that in a finite region, the effect of the gravitational effect of the source is cancelled somehow. Okay. So this goes along the same direction as this the solution for the Schwarzschild-like solution worked out by Gregory Gavadadze and Alberto Iglesias here. And in the sense that they also found a screening of the four-dimensional mass of the spherical body. So we will also see the same for the domain wall tension. And the other main result is that in contrast with this spherical case in the domain walls, the region where this screening takes place is essentially reduces to the domain wall core itself. Okay, so it happens at this very short distance scale, and hence this deviation between the result by the modified gravity theory and GR shows up at very short distance. Okay, so we can say in some sense that these domain walls are probes of gravity in the sense that they can distinguish if gravity is GR or it's some kind of infrared modification of it by just looking at the short distance gravitational effect of the domain wall. Okay, so let's get started. And I want to just show this Valli Gavadadze Porrati model. This is a quite clever construction in which the graviton has two kinetic terms, one in the bulk and one in the brain, and this coefficient, this mass Planck on the brain, is assumed to be much larger than the one in the bulk. And so the point is that this theory has a four-dimensional limit, so it's effectively four-dimensional even if the bulk is infinite and non-compact. And the reason is that so if you think in terms of a closed line decomposition, then for the very for modes with large four momenta, this kinetic term here acts as a boundary condition that makes the wave function for this very high momenta KK modes to be suppressed on the brain, right? So then the theory behaves like a four-dimensional theory, okay? So and there is this crossover scale, which is the ratio between the two plug masses, essentially, which is the typical scale where the theory goes five-dimensional. Okay. So another way to see this model is to look at the equation of motion. So we have just Einstein's equations with swords that has whatever matter we put on the brain, and this four-dimensional Einstein tensor on the brain, and it's convenient to, given that this is a sort of codimension one object, it's convenient to take to translate this into a matching condition, whereby the five-dimensional curvature translates here into the eccentric curvature term here in this four-dimensional equation. Here I have just the usual stress tensor I put on the for my sources on the brain, four-dimensional Einstein tensor, and there is this piece which will encode all the higher dimensional effects. Okay, and this equation is all I need you to remember about this this DGP model, because from this equation it's very simple to understand all the screening mechanisms that will happen. So in a sense, what we are doing is we are placing some source, and this source will affect, will generate some four-dimensional curvature and some eccentric curvature as well. But at the same time, we can rephrase this as having precisely this screening mechanism. If say some source generates some non-zero eccentric curvature, then what effectively sources the four-dimensional Einstein tensor is something that's more or less than the original source, and this is essentially the origin of this screening in DGP, the eccentric curvature term. By the same logic, if my source generates a non-zero Einstein tensor, then this we can think as having or generating some sort of a screening of the five-dimensional effect, which is encoded in the magnitude of the eccentric curvature term here. Okay, so this is more or less the logic. But before we go further, it's convenient to to use a perturbative treatment of all this. And what I mean is that it's useful to linearize these equations, and this is useful also because it can we can consider more general theories, not just the DGP model. So the thing is that in to linear order, any theory of gravity modified at large distances, we'll have this form. If we don't want the theory to have costs, then the mass term has to be of this Pauli-Fierce form. And here we allow for the mass to be a function of the scale, essentially. And this m square is effectively the square root of the box in DGP, and it's a constant for the usual massive gravity. So, and here in the left-hand side we also have the linearized form of the Einstein tensor. So, to linear order, we can consider a quite large class of theories of massive gravity, in a sense, which have this form. Then, in all of these theories, display this VDVZ discontinuity, which stands for Van Damme Gamma Sakharov, and is the following statement. So the thing is that when you take the mass to go to zero, you don't reproduce the massless or GR result. So in here, what I am showing is the amplitude, okay, of a scatter of one graviton scattering between two controlled sources. We could phrase this VDVZ continuity in terms of the propagator of this spin to field or whatever, but in terms of the amplitude, is also it can be done like this. And the thing is that when you take the small mass limit, this the tensor structure of the that appears in the sources is different in the massive case you get 1/3, and in the massless case you get the 1/2. So the reason why this happens is that of course in a massive spin 2 has more degrees of freedom, has among others a longitudinal polarization, and this in the limit when the mass goes to zero does not decouple as do the others. Okay, so the of course what this means is that fine, we saw that the VGP model sort of has a four-dimensional behavior, but actually this is not so clear. I mean, at least at the leading order in perturbation theory, you don't recover the same tensor structure as general relativity. So it's not trivial at all that you get the same behavior as general relativity. But of course, this these theories have been, I mean, worked out a lot, and the reason is that once you take into account the higher orders in perturbation theory, this discontinuity is washed out, and indeed the DGP model has a GR limit with a correct tensor structure. Okay, so so what happens schematically is this following thing. So let's imagine that we put some source, some with some mass, a spherical body, whatever, with this has an associated Schwarzschild radius or gravitational radius given by this, and at very larger scale, we have the scale essentially of modification of gravity in this theory. Then what happens is that another scale appears in the setup, which is an intermittent scale that depends on also on the gravitational radius, and for all the distances between smaller than this R star scale, the nonlinearities are important in the sense that this. That, for instance, the two graviton exchange is even much larger than the one single graviton exchange. So this means that in this region, the usual expansion in the weak field and in the weak source breaks down. And but it turns out that for DGP, you can do also an expansion on inverse powers of this. RC parameter, the scale of the modification, and you can work out what's the field inside here. Okay, so once you do this, you will see, as I was advertising, that the tensor structure in this region where the nonlinearities are present is indeed that of 4D GR. Then in this after this intermediate scale, it's indeed it's not the same as GR. It's some scalar tensor theory, and finally, I mean, after RC, it's just five-dimensional theory.
Just a small cautionary remark.
Mm-hmm.
You don't exactly know how to connect the solutions across our stuff. Right?
Okay.
Just so that we...
Mm-hmm.
That's an important little detail, right?
Yes.
Because of this whole business of strong coupling.
Perturbatively.
The only few solutions that sort of, you know, are these, if you let's put it this way, for localized objects, perturbatively or non-perturbatively, you don't know how to do it.
Well, there is this solution by...
But, you know, he himself, yes, I know, but we can discuss about that solution as to what he does in the bulk and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That's far from being clear
at
this point, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Can I ask a silly question? What's the difference between a four-dimensional scalar tensor theory and a five-dimensional theory?
So, in this sense, in 4DGR, what I mean by the tensor strike, the correct one, is that if you compute, say, the Newtonian potential, it has to have this form, okay? And this is the same parameter, the Schwarzschild radius. In a scalar tensor, it's not necessarily the same coefficient, because you have this scalar exchange, which is repulsive,
mm-hmm.
right? And depending on the details of the model, this can get some rescaling. Okay, so that's what I mean.
If you like a short and sweet answer, it's extra modes of here.
Right.
Extra kick is there.
You're saying when you go to the 5-dimensional. So you're looking at an effective scalar.
It's extra states, or if you like, it's running of the effect in Newton's constant, and what happens is that you change the momentum transfer very much too. But this is the theorem.
Okay, so as I was saying, in this region close to the source, you can indeed compute that the leading order Newtonian potential is of this form, and you can compute the corrections to that, which are subleading and take some form, whatever, which is in some sense similar to having a Schwarzschild anti de Sitter metric close to the close to the source. And as I was saying, what you expect is that after this R star, you get a Newtonian potential like this, with some constant A, which by now we don't know. And after RC, we would actually expect the usual five-dimensional Newtonian potential. And the naive argument says that B should be equal to 1, right? But then as we were saying, Gregory Galazzi and Alberto came, and they worked out a solution that I like to call Schwarzschild DGP, which is the spherical symmetry solution. But the caveat is that they only computed the solution on the brain, so they didn't extend it into the bulk, right? Correct me if. However, the equations on the brain can be closed, and you can compute the full form of the metric. So up to this issue of whether this solution can be extended regularly into the bulk or not, what this solution tells us is that these two coefficients A and B that I put here are such that A is zero and that B is something small, very small.
So what is the status of this solution? This is definite? I mean, this is the solution, or
so
one of many solutions?
So I think the status is still the same. I mean,
it's probably fair to say, I think from the discussions with Alberto explained this. It's one of possibly many solutions subject to the boundary conditions in the bulk. This is certainly what seems to be a good description of some distribution of a master loops on the brain in the near brain limit. What's not completely clear, I think, is basically if you were to take this and extend it into the bulk.
Yeah, the extension to the bulk is not worked out, so.
So the question is, if you start with a bulk that's infinite, semi-infinite, and completely flat far away, will this solution converge there, or will you get something like a, you know, hole of naked singularity?
So
these things,
yeah.
It's not clear. I think it's fair to say it's probably not clear, especially given this whole issue with strong power.
Where is the Hubble radius on this scale?
Infinity.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this is with a flat plane. But I think that the reason why I am explaining all of this is that we find a very very similar behavior for the domain walls solutions, in the sense that we're also going to find that the analog of this parameter is zero after the distance r star. And that the coefficient in front of the five-dimensional behavior is also suppressed in a way that I will make precise later. So I think when we realized this, I got much more convinced of this solution, personally. But okay, and then there's this other issue about this the solution, that it has this parameter beta, so which. If you see in this perturbative treatment, you can compute this leading correction. It has this 3/2 power here, and in their solution, it's 3/2 minus beta, with beta something small, and this has to do in my mind with the fact that so you can always choose to have there is some freedom here. Related to the fact that you have this projected Weyl tensor, as seen from the brain, which is it's an integration constant of the bulk, okay, and this I guess that in the way that they choose to close the equations, this shows up in this way. So maybe it's possible to choose the Weyl tensor in the bulk in such a way that this is zero, but anyway this is a small parameter, so it's a small deviation from that, and it seems that it shouldn't affect this other properties here. So okay, so. Also, what I meant to point out about all of this is that in the reason why you have this screening, okay, the fact that this A is zero is what I call a screening, because the four-dimensional mass here is effectively zero. Okay, you only have the five-dimensional term. The fact that this has disappeared, the effective four-dimensional mass, can be thought as coming from the fact that here, in this region, the eccentric curvature has a non-zero value in all the region where the nonlinearities are present. Okay, so the integrated effect, so that's the logic, the integrated effect of all these in all the region of this tensor is such that it cancels the gravitational mass. Okay, so so this is a table that in some sense summarizes this screening properties in this solution, this Schwarzschild DGP solution. And what I already said is that this is you have a complete screening of the four-dimensional mass in both branches, actually, when you do it, and five-dimensional mass is screened partially, not completely, by a factor like this, which when you put the numbers is quite a small factor, by the four-dimensional and five-dimensional mass, what I mean is just the coefficients of this of this expansion in the Newtonian potential. Okay. So this is just introductory, and the outline of what I'm going to talk from now on is I'm going to review what are the properties of domain walls and strings in ordinary GR, because that's what we need to compare to with our solution in DGP. Then I'll go through to the solutions, and finally I will comment on the screening properties of these solutions, and how we can extend this to other modifications of gravity. Okay, so let's start with the domain walls. I mean, most of you maybe know about this, but let me go through quickly. So I want to consider a domain wall at z equals 0. The form of the stress tensor is like this. It's a number of the domain wall. And it was, I mean, worked out a long time ago by Valentin's and Sikiri, that the metric is like this. So this... so the at z equals 0, okay, the domain wall is the domain wall world volume corresponds to this this thing, okay, with z equals 0. So we see that it's inflating with Hubble expansion given by h equal to this, okay, and so that's the first thing we we learn. I mean, the dimension one objects inflate. And also, as a consequence, given that actually the space outside the wall is flat, what we are getting is Minkowski space in Rindler kind coordinates. So, but in terms of this distance to the domain wall, this has a Rindler horizon at z equal to 1 over h. Okay, so these are the main two features: the domain wall inflates and it has a horizon at finite distance. So if you right in pictures, this corresponds to the interior of the hyperboloid, and the hyperboloid corresponds to the domain wall. Now, if you compute the geodesic, because that's just Minkowski space, these are straight lines. And from the picture, it's even clear that a geodesic observer sees that the domain wall accelerates away from him, right? So this means that the domain walls effectively generate a repulsive gravitational field, okay, which we can also read off from this sort of Newtonian potential. Okay, so for cosmic strings, well, we have a similar stress tensor, but with less less non-zero components, and this is also very well known. If the tension is less than a certain critical value, then the space transverse to the string is just a conical space, which we can construct by just removing some deficit angle here, and we can do the same trick before. We compute a geodesic, right? This as a function of time is just would stay constant, which means that at a constant distance, which means that the string generates no force. Okay. So about the strings, there is something a little bit less trivial, and which is not so well worked out in the literature, which is what happens when the tension goes critical or supercritical. And by this I mean when the deficit angle becomes 2 pi or would become more than 2 pi. Okay, so in for those cases, we need to work out. And so let's start with the critical case. So this is more or less the picture we have for the transverse space. And of course, given that the deficit angle is 2 pi, we have to include the transverse thickness of the wall. Otherwise, it's just it just collapses to zero space, right? So, but in this case, the transverse space is simply asymptotically cylinder with radius given essentially by the transverse thickness of the string. Okay, so that's still easy, but what's not so easy is what happens for a super critical string. So in that which by which I mean that the tension is larger than 2 pi and Planck. So in this case, what cannot be, of course, is that the deficit angle is more than 2 pi, because if it's more than 2 pi, this closes, and we have to put another string to find a distance. And we want to consider the space generated by a single string. Okay, so in that case, what happens is that it turns out that for this regime, we are in the same regime as topological inflation, and the core of the string starts to inflate due to topological inflation. So I will derive it perhaps in a few slides, but let me just display with no proof that the Hubble rate on the string takes this form. Is of course something that switches on when the tension is more than 2 pi and Planck square. And here, instead of the of M Planck, there appears the effective M Planck of one dimension less, and with the compactification length given by the thickness of the string. Okay, so let me just put the pictures, because that's easier to view. So the story is that, so as with the critical string, the space becomes compactified to a distance with radius of order d, the thickness. So that's why this d appears here, and the picture of the space of the space time now is that after finite distance of given by this, we have like for the domain wall a Rindler horizon. Okay, so actually I mean that's almost the same thing, because once we know that a critical string compactifies one of the directions of the transverse space, then this becomes essentially like a codimension one object, and that's why it starts to inflate, because codimension one object inflate and so on.
Just for curiosity, did you ever get to have a full bulk solution at distances far from the string, so that you can analytically continue across to the supercritical vaults, or you only had some sort of approximate formula?
No, it's
we have a full.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. So okay, so these are the things I wanted to comment about the strings in even in GR. And now we are ready to analyze how are the domain walls going to behave in the DGP. Okay, so the first thing is that when you think a little bit about how a domain wall can a solution can be in DGP, there is a clear paradox, because usually the solutions interpolate between the four-dimensional regime and the five-dimensional regime. But four-dimensional regime means that it is a codimension one domain wall. Okay, but codimension one domain walls inflate, as I was arguing. Then, after some scale, we have to recover the 5D behavior. But the 5D behavior is the codimension two. And codimension two is a string which does not inflate, so there is a problem. I mean, either it inflates or not, or does not inflate. But what we cannot get is that it's impossible to interpolate, right? So actually, this is the resolution. The solutions of domain walls in DGP do not interpolate. So there is.
Actually, can I interrupt you one second? Yeah. When you found that when you're saying that it inflates, so you basically looked at the static solution, find there's unstable mode, and then, but you're not actually finding the time dependent solution. That
for what do you mean? No, for
the string.
For a domain wall.
or any of these when yeah right. You're just looking at the static solution and saying that it's unstable because you have a negative mode.
No. I'm computing the full solution. I am just working out the world volume. How is the world volume? The world volume turns out to be the sitter.
Oh, okay.
So it inflates.
Okay.
For a domain wall. Okay. So then there is actually we can also understand this why these domain walls do not inflate by the following argument. So the point is, you can expect, so this R0 stands for this Rindler horizon you have at finite distance. If the Rindler horizon was larger than RC, the scale of modification, then you already expect that you don't have this horizon, okay? Because this horizon is what you have in the four-dimensional regime, okay? And you could possibly have it if the this naive value of the horizon is less than RC, okay? So, but not larger. So. The story is then, okay, let's compare what's this this ratio between the naive domain wall horizon and RC, and it turns out to be precisely the same as the ratio between the tension and the fundamental Planck marks. So the domain wall horizon is larger than RC precisely when the tension is less than the critical one, is when you have a deficit angle less than 2 pi. Okay, so this sort of makes sense, right? Because I mean you already expect that in that case then. There is no horizon, and which actually means that it doesn't inflate. But okay, this is very very naive argument. So, right. Before going,
it's fully consistent with what you know from topological inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Your argument may be naive, but it's at least fully consistent with what you know from topological inflation.
Mm-hmm.
It's very suggestive.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay, yes.
I'm just saying that I like it, okay?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay, so before then going to the actual solutions, there is one more piece of information we can get by perturbative arguments, which is actually very important, which is what is R star? What's the scale where the non-linearities are important at the for the domain walls? Okay, so this, by definition, we can work out by comparing when the two graviton exchange diagram is comparable to the one graviton exchange diagram. Okay, and this is dominated by this longitudinal polarization, so that we can forget about the others. And this polarization is sourced by the trace of T, which is just a delta function in this case, one-dimensional, so that this polarization goes like mod z. Okay, so once we plug this mod z in the form of these diagrams, then we immediately realize that so in these diagrams there's always one factor with two derivatives, and this is actually linear away from the wall, so that this diagram is always zero out of away from the domain wall. What this means is that the nonlinearities are never comparable, are never large, okay, away from the domain wall, okay, and actually they are only these two diagrams are only comparable in the core of the domain wall. Okay, so the conclusion is that the analog of R star for the domain wall is the thickness of the domain wall. Okay, which also means that the screening, if it takes place, it will take place inside the core of the wall itself. And this is what I was saying at the beginning, that this scale of the scale where the screening takes place is very short for the domain walls, and that's why it's a short distance probe of gravity. Okay, so I think we can go for the solutions. So the good thing about this solutions is that if we assume that the wall is maximally symmetric, which is a good way to start with, then by Birkhoff's theorem we are granted that the form of the bulk is like this. Okay, so now kappa here is one if the wall is the sitter. If the wall sheet of the wall is the sitter, 2 plus 1. And kappa will be 0 if it's flat. Okay? This is my notation. But whichever is kappa, the thing is that the form of the full 5D metric can be put in this way, okay? Where kappa enters in this function. Okay? This is just simply the weak rotated version of the Birkhoff theorem. So the next step is that, well, if we want the bulk to be non-singular and non-compact, which is the actual DGP with a non-compact bulk, then the only possibility is that C is zero. Okay, so that we have this, that this metric is the flat one, okay? So we are reduced to the flat metric, but still, because we want to consider both cases with the inflating domain wall or flat, I will still keep this kappa equal to 0 or 1, and simply they will correspond to these two coordinates of Minkowski. For the kappa equal to 0, this is not there, and this is three-dimensional flat space, which means these are Cartesian coordinates, and for kappa equal to 1, this is actually also flat space, but in Rindler coordinates. Okay, now now the story will be that the in terms of these two coordinates z and r, the brain will be located at some trajectory like this, say, and the domain wall will sit at some point here. So what we can do is parametrize the brain location like this, but of course, when you are doing a parameterization, you are introducing some freedom, some arbitrariness, which we can gauge fix by choosing a gauge like this. Okay, if we choose this gauge, then the induced metric on the brain on this curve will be such that this xi is the proper coordinate, which we will choose that is center at the domain wall location. Okay, so xi is the distance to the domain wall, and the metric, the induced metric on the brain, will be for kappa equal to 1 when it's this Rindler-like slicing. I will have some function here of xi, which can be non-trivial. And when kappa is 0, there is no dependence on xi, so that we can already see that the metric on the brain will be flat. Okay, so let's go on. Now, the thing is that what determines the actual form of this trajectory, of this embedding, if you want, is nothing but the junction conditions. This. What we have to do is to compute the extrinsic curvature of this surface. We have to compute the intrinsic curvature of this surface and plug it in here, and we get these two equations. So, let me just tell you that tau is the tension of the brain here. Okay. And here, the second equation is it's like the equation that gives the junction condition on the domain wall. As you can see, it's sourced by this delta function, which corresponds to the domain wall. And I am only keeping the second derivatives of this warp factor. Okay, so these equations are very easy to solve, and away from the domain wall, they take just this form, which if anybody knows by heart, this is precisely the metric of domain wall in the sitter, with xi zero being essentially the location of the domain wall in this inflating the universe. So the h is the Hubble rate of the brain, which solves the same equation as always. I mean, in the cosmological setup of DGP. And so the way to visualize this geometry is the following. So we are taking this ZR plane, and the trajectory in general is an arc of circumference like this, but we can cut it by two lines parallel to R, the R axis, and then identify. If you do this, then you are left with a sort of pancake like this, and the cusps of the pancake correspond to the location of the main wall. Okay, so this, yeah. So in the if you take the usual conventional branch, the bulk corresponds to the interior of this pancake, And you have to, of course, because of the Z2 symmetry, you have to take another copy and glue by the surface of the brain. Okay. If you want to take the other branch, then the bulk corresponds to the exterior, and it's this thing glued to another copy of the same. So well, this is a little bit schematic, but it's what it looks like. So the only thing left is to determine what's this angle, or the in other words, the location of the domain wall, which is determined by the other equation, and of course depends only on the value of the tension of the domain wall. So when we integrate this equation in the region near the domain wall, this piece it may not be very intuitive, but this piece gives the deficit angle, and this piece gives the jump in the slope in the derivative of R. So and this is the equation that you get. So this is the domain wall tension, and this domain wall tension its effect goes into generating some jump in the profile of the induced metric in R prime, and in generating some deficit angle. Okay, so the only thing we need to do now is to express actually these two things are related. So and this gives an equation like this, which can be solved, and we are done. Okay, so so now I'm going to show a few cases, the most important. And the first most important is this subcritical wall when the tension is smaller than this critical value. And I'm assuming that the brain has no tension and we are on the conventional branch. So in this case, the solution is very easy. It's the same as codimension 2. It's the brain trajectory is straight, and the bulk corresponds to this wedge, and we have to take another copy of the same, so that the net result is that we have a deficit angle given by this and this. Okay, and besides in this case the wall volume of the wall in this case is flat. Okay, so this is the case that I was referring to in the introduction. What's happening is it's quite interesting in this case. So the let's see where can I right, all the tension is to put in this way invested in generating some deficit angle, but it doesn't generate any jump in the slope of the intrinsic metric. Okay, so that what this means is that the four-dimensional effective tension, which is precisely the usual tension plus the effect from the eccentric curvature, which is this deficit angle. This thing is the combination that is zero in this case. Okay, the tension only goes to the deficit angle, and the five-dimensional tension is not screened at all. Okay, so the picture is this. I mean, in this case, we put a domain wall that is subcritical, and the extrinsic curvature generates another one that has exactly the same tension but with opposite sign. Okay, so the superposition of the both things, of course, has no tension at all, no nothing, and it generates absolutely no four-dimensional curvature. Okay, so the tension is completely screened, and the metric, the induced metric on the brain is completely flat, even at the domain wall location. Okay? So the next case is this still with a flat brain and a supercritical wall. In this case, we have some screening, but not absolute. This is the same equation as before. We have the jump in the exchange of curvature on the domain wall. This is the deficit angle, essentially, which is saturated in this case to 2 pi. And okay, this tension. So that here, what I'm plotting is the following. So this is the Hubble radius at the domain wall. Of the domain wall, okay. This right. When the tension is just above critical, this starts inflating, okay. And when it's very large, well, it goes to the usual four-dimensional result, which would be this dotted line. Okay, the picture of the geometry in this case is like this. I mean, so the brain is corresponds to this disk. This this is the wall, and the bulk corresponds to the interior of this sort of flat pancake. Okay, in this case, it's like the previous pancake, but when the curvature of the brain is flat. So unless we resolve the domain wall thickness, I mean this geometry is again singular. So note that the geometry on the brain is very similar to the Wilenkin-Ipse CQB, with the only difference that the actual value of the Hubble rate on the wall is simply different. Okay, so these are the what we get for when we include the tension of the brain, and of these plots we can focus on this here. the story again is the same, that if the tension is less than the critical value, which is here, then the Hubble radius at the domain wall worksheet is much larger than the four-dimensional result should tell you. Okay. So, and this is in this case the same screening effect. Okay, so in the self-accelerated branch, what happens is a little bit more funny, because so say you put a positive tension domain wall, and what happens is that the deficit angle actually is negative. Actually, so the fact that it is on a self-accelerated brain, the self-accelerated brain has effectively negative tension. And this, in the end, translates into having also, for this source, the opposite effect. Okay, the deficit angle is negative. At the same time, from the four-dimensional point of view, the instead of screening, there is anti-screening. What this means is that you put some tension of your domain wall, and what you get is actually that the jump in the eccentric curvature at the domain wall location is twice as much as what you would have expected, and this is this factor 2 you get here. So the reason the picture is this following. So you place your domain wall somewhere, and the extensive curvature switches on a replica domain wall of the original one with the same tension in this case. Okay, so that the tension is twice as much. Okay. Well, this can be understood from the geometry. The reason why the deficit angle is negative in this case and so on, but let's not spend much time. But I think I'm.
But it sounds scary.
Huh?
It sounds scary.
Yeah. So okay, this is a summary of.
No, it sounds well. Okay, you know what I think about it. This is
for the self-explanatory.
Yeah, you know. Well, we can talk a little bit later. I'll let you finish, but I think it's a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's behaving like negative mass.
Yeah. Mm. You know, it's like basically one field going down a potential well, all right? You know, the ghost, and because of energy conservation, something else going up.
Mm-hmm.
But at least we know perturbed when the ghost is there. And then you have this very funny behavior when it's here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, how much time do I have left? Minus 5 minutes I have left.
Yeah,
5, okay. So, okay, well, this is a summary of this pattern of screening, but I will not describe it because I'm late. So, there's just one thing I want to comment, which is about the screening of the five-dimensional tension in in the sense so far I haven't discussed this much. we have only seen that essentially for these subcritical walls there is no screening of the 5D tension in, which just means that the deficit angle is the same as what you would expect, but the five-dimensional effect of these domain walls gets very much suppressed when the domain wall becomes supercritical, and so let's consider this case. So. So we are in this regime where we have this sort of topological inflation on the domain wall. For this, we need to consider that its thickness is finite, and as happened also for codimension one objects, codimension one walls that are thick also have a non-zero pressure in the transverse direction. Okay, so this.
Sorry, what are you talking about? You're embedding a membrane into five dimensions, this thing, right? So
yeah.
Supercritical membrane in five dimensions.
Yeah. So what I was arguing is that once it's supermassive, this pressure we need to take it into account, and it's non-zero. It's necessarily non-zero, and the argument is the following. So when you integrate the junction condition across the wall, if you take it into account, it goes on the right hand side like this. So the integral over the thickness of rho is what gives us the tension.
Mm-hmm.
that's the left hand side, which gives us the deficit angle, which is 2 pi in that case, and. Okay, by using the equations of motion, we can translate this pressure at the domain wall center like this, so that you get this equation, and that's what I displayed before, without any proof, and this is the proof of how.
It's just a statement that if you have so much such a huge amount of energy density inside a defect, you have to hold it together so that it does not explode.
Yeah. So, so you have this this kind of relation, right? And right. But for our wall in DGP, we got a similar equation, which we didn't need to take into account the thickness, by the way. And the reason is that the what plays the role here of this one-dimensionless effective Planck mass is substituted in the DGP case by N Planck. Okay, so. But now note that so these equations are the same except that for this factor, the N Planck that appears here. But this can be much smaller in this case. Sorry, much larger once it's downstairs. Okay, so if I just take the ratio of this, I mean now I am thinking, okay, a supermassive domain wall is a codimension to object that's inflating. So how much should it inflate? I mean, if it's from four dimensional point of view, it should inflate like that. What is actually inflating in this DGP setup is like that. So let's take the ratio, okay? And the ratio is this, which is a very small factor. Okay, so that the actual five-dimensional effect, five-dimensional effect, is suppressed very much and by a factor very similar to the 5D screening factor of the solution of Gavaradze and Iglesias. Okay, so and that's quite striking to from my point of view, and here I am assuming that D is the thickness D is the same as the.
You're basically saying that the size of the domain wall is automatic when it's Weierstrass scaling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we get that the screening of the 5D tension is by magnitude of this order, which is very similar to. What they see in the spherical body case. Okay, so I am have a few references to conclude. Now, getting back to the more general models of modified gravity, the idea is we can also. Generalize these solutions of domain walls to these models, and the idea is very simple. The point is that once you put this source to be the of the form of the domain wall, which is what I showed, it has three equal entries and one zero. Then this combination, the T mu minus 1/3 T that appears here, essentially, this is of this form that has only one non-zero entry, and this is the same as a pure gauge for the metric for the linearized metric. Okay, so if the metric is pure gauge, then when you contract it with conserved sources. This will produce no effects. Okay, so that's why I mean we also expect this kind of effect to be general for any IR modified theory of gravity. And finally, last transparency is for the following. So I have said that this. Domain walls are short distance probes of large scale modified gravity, but this is actually a bit tricky because we are assuming that the domain wall is infinite in extent, So in a sense, the main wall is also is already probing the scale of modification. So that's not very honest. But the story is that okay, then let's consider a finite domain wall in the longitudinal direction, and see under what conditions we expect the same to hold. Okay, so well, we could do an estimate similar to the ones for localized sources. The point is that the R star scale for a spherical scale for a spherical body is this RG times RC squared to the 1/3.
How does this end? What is you've made a finite domain wall now, so it ends on a string.
It ends on a string, yeah, for example.
But you've worked this out.
You're just
guessing.
Yeah. We are just seeing order of magnitude estimates. The point is that the gravitational mass of such a disk domain wall should scale L squared. And the argument is that if as long as this R star, the scale of nonlinearities, stays much less than L, then we will get the same. We will get that the solution.
But then
is
it's sufficiently long distance to be probing it.
Right. So what this condition translates into this.
Sure.
So L has to be much larger than delta, and delta is essentially the would-be deficit angle times RC. So if delta is moderately small or large, then L is of order RC or larger. But I could always play with the tension and imagine delta is 10 to the minus 12. Then you can get a disk domain wall that's not of order RC and still is flat and so on.
So if I let delta go to zero, I don't have anything that still probes long distances.
If you let delta go to zero,
so I can probe long distances with nothing.
No, so the thing is this disk with very very small tension wouldn't need to be of order present Hubble size, and still it would be flat, right?
But is this the statement that it's right? That it's probing the long distances. I just can't understand that statement that it's probing long.
Right, so
you must be assuming some order of limits here, which is not this clear.
Some
order of limits here. And it's true, if you don't if you take depth angle to be zero, you're taking tension to be zero, that's there is no wall, so you're just in some DGP vacuum. And so in principle you might then argue that anything probes, strictly speaking, right? And then anything probes sort of long distance corrections, but not very well.
I'm just I'm not trying to be pedantic. I'm just trying to understand the meaning of probing.
It's some pick up the long distance.
Maybe the problem is that so if we are taking this delta to be so small.
Yes.
Then actually it would be difficult perhaps to compare to the four dimensional effect, because in that case it would be also a very small effect. Right?
Sure. But, well, I guess so
I mean, it seems like you're getting something for free. You're getting this leverage somehow,
mm-hmm.
but it's all from the size of delta. So I'm just trying to understand it by making delta very small, and then I get a mysterious result. So I guess I am not convinced I believe it, that I get this leverage unless I, you know, so if I'm not to believe this at delta equals zero, what sets the value of delta where I stop believing it? And maybe it's delta equals one. And I'm not I'm not an expert in these calculations, so I'm just trying to understand, you know, just trying to get some intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter when you take delta to zero that RC goes to infinity?
Not well. No, I mean, RC is an independent parameter, right?
You don't have to keep R star in some intermediate domain.
Yeah, what is R star?
So, I think I don't understand. I don't understand
the question.
Yeah, what you're saying.
Well, I'm just trying to. I'm looking at your last equation on that slide.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that. Oh, gee, I can. It looks like I'm getting something, some leverage. So by considering the main wall, even a smaller, I can discover something about large distances.
Okay. So what I meant here is that. Yes, I mean, if delta is not extremely small, then that's the catch. I mean, the reason why the domain wall behaves in such a different way from GR is because L is of order RC, so it is actually probing the scale of modified
right.
gravity.
Right. Right.
But it then, if delta is very small,
it seems to help you.
Yeah. Then.
But I am just trying to understand that. And when I, one way to try to understand it is to send delta to zero and see what happens. And I don't get what happens.
Then you lose the tension.
Yeah. Then you don't have tension. So actually, it's consistent with delta equal to zero.
Yeah.
It's tension equal to zero. The gravitational effect of a tensionless domain wall is nothing.
Right, so how am I probing large distances?
You mean?
Yeah.
No.
In that case, you're not.
Right. So
you're
how
not.
Do I know when I'm not or when I am? What
no,
is,
no.
What
the
is the switch that turns?
What? By what I mean by what you are actually probing or not the large distance modified modification is if L is comparable to RC or not. Okay, so
I'm not supposed to put the red and yellow together.
No, the thing is that when I wrote this, I was thinking. So the argument is twofold. If delta is moderate,
moderate, okay.
Then L is comparable to RC,
right.
Or larger, and then you are, which
sure.
means that you are probing
sure, yeah,
the modification,
that's okay.
And that's
that
why,
I understand.
And that's why.
Yeah.
But if delta is very very small, then it's no longer true that L is comparable to RC.
Right.
So this domain wall is not probing the scale of modification, and still you expect that it is flat. It generates. It doesn't generate any. Curvature.
So it is probing in that sense.
No.
It's just not probing.
Right.
Okay. So I'm not supposed to associate those.
Right. No. Yeah.
Okay.
I went.
That's my confusion. Okay. Thank you.
I went. too fast in there. So so I'm done. And okay, to conclude, just say that, well, it seems that there is this screening mechanism or effect in theories of of gravity modified at large distances. We have at least these two examples: the Schwarzschild-like solution of Alberto and Gavalje, and this one. They share some common features. They are not completely the same in all aspects, but this screening property seems to be present in both cases. And as an application of what we find, I mean, the it turns out that domain walls are very sensitive probes that even at very short distances, very very close to the domain wall itself, you could tell from whether it repels you or not that gravity is modified or not at very large scale. So I think that's it.
So if you had one sitting there, it's sort of already done the probing for you.
Yes.
And you can just go and
yes,
it off.
Yes.
Like
if right, if the solar system came across a domain wall, it would be fantastic because we would learn.
Send a spacecraft out and measure.
Right.
Because it sort of had plenty of time to measure the whole.
That's yes.
Thanks, everyone.